Okay, so I just want this to be a very informal spotlight on Mark. For those of you who don't know, I imagine you do know since you're here, but he has an impressive list of credits everywhere from New Warriors, Avengers, Justice League of America, Amazing and Ultimate Spider-Man, Thunderbolts, and his work has now spanned 3 decades, as I was teasing him earlier this evening, or this afternoon.
I look younger than you do.
So I guess to start off, let's chat a little bit how you got started in comic books, and I believe it was through the Marvel trial book.
Sure. Well, you want to tell a story? You want me to?
Go right ahead. Oh, I've only heard it a few times.
Hi, everybody. It's a good cautionary tale. Back in 19, I think it was around 83, Marvel came out with the Marvel trial contest. And at the time, I was 27 years old, and I was just about ready to quit trying to get into comics. I was working at Lockheed and had a pretty good technical job doing technical illustration, and I wasn't going to be one of these 30-year-old guys walking around a con with an old portfolio going, look at my stuff, you know. If it wasn't going to happen, it wasn't going to happen. I had a wife and a kid and a house and the whole nine yards. And so Marvel came out with this book, and it was full-size comic book pages, and I don't know if you guys have seen it. It starts off with a finished comic by John Romita Jr., and then they drop out the coloring, and then they drop out the lettering, and then they drop out the inking, and person who wanted to do coloring, lettering, or inking, he finally ended up with blank pages with a little plot for 7 pages, I think, 8 pages. And that was my job to do that part of it. Well, it was like $15, which seemed like a lot of money at the time. And Marvel had sort of a bad rep at the time, again, and I wasn't going to buy it. Well, the guy at the bookstore, comic book store I go to, is a friend of mine, Cliff Biggers. He publishes Comic Shop News, and he's one of the smartest guys I know. And he gave it to me. He said, look, if you don't do this, you'll hate yourself. And so I did it and sent it in and didn't hear anything for like 6 months. 10 o'clock at night, one night, I'm home alone, and a phone call, some girl from Marvel, I have no idea who it is. Says, Mark Bagley? Said, yes. I said, you won the Marvel trial contest. I'm like, what? So my ship had sailed. I was going, but... And then I didn't hear anything for like 3 months. I was like, what the hell, you know? I was really excited, and then there was nothing. And so Atlanta's got a convention called Dragon Con, and it was a pretty good-sized deal that year. And they had Jim Shooter, who was head of Marvel at the time, was coming down, and John Romita, the big John, was coming down, and a bunch of guys. I thought, well, I'm just going to go and say hi to Jim Shooter and see what the hell's going on. And... I took some art samples, and I waited in line forever for John Romita to give me a portfolio review. And, I mean, it was a room bigger than this, packed, because it was John Romita, not me. And he sat there, I introduced myself, and he knew about the trial contest. And so he spent about 20 minutes giving me this portfolio review, which was just, he ripped me from one end to the other. But in the nicest way, I never once felt uncomfortable. It was the most amazing thing, because he's the nicest guy in the world. And he told me everything I was doing wrong, which is pretty much everything. And I took everything to heart. And so I left that room, and I hunted down Jim Shooter, who's, I don't know if everybody knows who he is. He's like 6'10", and... craggy, acneed face. He always wore black suits and just the most intimidating looking guy you ever saw in your life. And I walked up to him. He's had a crowd of people around him. I politely waited. Walked up to him and says, Mr. Shooter. Yes. I'm Mark Bagley. I won the trial contest. And he's like, and he recognized the name. He's actually involved enough that he knew the name. He's like, oh, my God, Mark, I'm sorry. We really dropped the ball on this. We need to get you up to New York. We're going to have you come up to New York, and you can introduce, meet the editors, and, you know, we'll see what we can do for you. And so, you know, I was kind of young. I was 27, but I was kind of naive. I can't afford to fly to New York. He said, no, we'll fly you. It's okay. So it was hilarious. So he flew me up, and I spent 3 days being thrown out of every office. He was out of town. Shooter was out of town. He's in Europe dealing with some trouble with Marvel UK. And so I got hauled around by some assistant editor to everybody's office, and nobody wanted to see me. And I was there with another guy. He'd won the inking part, Doug Hazelwood, who's actually still working in the business. He works for DC a lot. And, I mean, by the third day, we're sitting there, and I'm in the bullpen doing art corrections just to do something. Frustrated as hell. And the last guy I saw on the last day, like an hour before the flight took off, was Greg Wright. He was editing what was called the New Universe, which was a whole thing, and it was going down in flames, and they needed people to just draw. And so I started working there, and I worked for the next year and a half, full-time at Lockheed, and then I lived on about 3 hours of sleep a night, and took up drinking coffee, literally, and then about the time, you know, I got laid off from Lockheed, I had enough work from Marvel, and I've been doing comics ever since before a number of you people ever been born. So that's my story breaking in. Wasn't that exciting? So anyway, the moral of the story is, you get your shot, you take it. You be ready for it, you be prepared, but you don't just go, no, I'll do the next one. Because literally, I may have never broken into comics after that. I mean, so Cliff has gotten some, my friend Cliff has gotten some really nice presents from me over the years. So, any...
it's great.
Hey!
You mentioned John Romita as being a big influence. Did you have any other artists that were influenced?
Oh, yeah, all of them. I try to pick up bits and pieces from everybody. Some guys you may have never heard of, but, you know, Gil Kane and John Buscema was great, and Sal Buscema and Jack Kirby and Gene Coe. Everybody has, you know. I was a sponge because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I did go to art school after high school. I joined the Army so I could afford art school. I was in the Army for 3 years. And then went to Ringling School of Art in Sarasota, Florida, and quit my last semester because I got up to here with the painting instructors and did construction for 3 years. So that was a good plan. And I broke in, and then I got a job at Lockheed doing technical illustration, which was kind of cool. I'd never used a drafting arm before. Those things are really cool. And then, right about, like I said, then you're the rest of it. Won the contest. Been doing it ever since. I am dressed up right now. I have a zipper. I get up, I walk, make my coffee, have my breakfast, and walk to my desk, and usually work in my pajamas until it's about 2 o'clock and time to go out and get the mail. And I have enough respect for myself to actually put some jeans on with a zipper. And So
around 1990, you took on the New Warriors, which was sort of your first
mainstream gig, yeah.
That's right. And do you remember what was so special about that title? There's a lot of other teen books, like the Teen Titans, which had a whole bunch of psychics. But these guys were original heroes. A Night Thrasher, and then aboard a few of the other fellows, like Nova, Justice,
right,
at that time. How did you bring them together? How did you try to make something new out of a teen book?
Well, they were all brought together before me, actually. They were introduced in Thor, because I think Tom DeFalco wanted creators ownership of the whole deal, which is fine. But like I said, it was my first shot into mainstream comics, and they were looking for somebody to draw the book. And I mean, it was Namorita and Nova and freaking Speedball, and and nobody wanted to draw it. So I was just working my ass off doing Strike Force Mortuary and some other stuff. And actually, I was doing backup drawings for Captain America behind Ron Lim, and I was trying to get myself into the mainstream so I could actually make some decent money. And I was making enough money, I was working 80 hours a week, that my wife could finally quit work and take care of our daughter. And right about 3 months after she quit work, I decided I had to slow my output by a third so I could do better work, because I wasn't getting the jobs I should get. Right about that time, Eric Larson got Spider-Man after McFarlane, and I had done a few fill-ins on Spider-Man, and I thought I was sort of the next guy on the list, you know, and that got yanked out from under me, and nothing had been promised, but it felt like it had been yanked out of. So I slowed down. I said, I got to slow down, and which cut my income, of course. And Patty's like, genius. And so doing those, they started looking for somebody who could do this book. And Fabian Nicieza, who's an editor and writer on the book, and Tom, they knew of me, and he kind of liked my stuff and saw what I was doing, and they didn't really want to use me, but he kind of pushed for it, and I did some samples, and they liked them, and, you know, it was the first book we actually took samples for inkers, and so we got Larry Malstadt to ink it, and he was doing a nice job, and the book was real successful. I mean, I've never been on a book that was unsuccessful, luckily. I mean, I don't know why. It's been with good writers and good inkers, and that one worked out really well, so, and I was on it for, I don't know, 40 issues or so.
That's right.
So, and then the editor on that was Danny Fingeroth, who's a good friend of mine, and he was editing the Spider-Man books, at the time, and he knew that if he didn't give me a Spider-Man book, I was going to kill him. Not kidding, I have a gun. I actually have two. And I am from Georgia, so, you know that rules. And he gave me that book, and I did Spider-Man and New Warriors both for about 6 months until I was just about dead and just said, I got to give New Warriors up because I can't work that hard. And that was that. And so I started with Spider-Man.
And then later in the 1990s, you teamed up with Kurt Busiek to do the Thunderbolts.
Yes.
Which was an amazing series because, again, it had this brand new superhero team, which I think started in The Incredible Hulk. And it was showcasing all these brand new heroes, and then all of a sudden, in the last page of Thunderbolts number one, was this grand reveal that this brand new team of superheroes was in fact the Masters of Evil.
And ahead of them's a Nazi. Everybody hates Nazis. He's a scarred Nazi. I say Nazi, not Nazi, because Nazi sounds better.
So, can you go back a little bit and maybe tell us how that came about?
Thank God for Thunderbolts, because my career was going in flames. The editor-in-chief of Marvel at the time was Bob Harris. I'd heard from enough people that he just didn't like my stuff. And he's one of those editors-in-chiefs who's not smart enough to know, okay, I may not like that particular guy's work, but he sells a lot of books, so we should keep him working. And he was so negative about it that I was having trouble getting hired by anybody else at Marvel. And they moved me off of Amazing Spider-Man, which I was done with Amazing. I'd done that for almost 3 years, and I was tired, and I was ready for something else, and I couldn't get another mainstream book at Marvel. And I don't remember if I was under contract or still freelancing, but Marvel was my home, and I was moved off, and I was doing some online comic thing, which was way before the online comics were even possible. And I did a Star Trek thing, and I did something else, and I was miserable. And this was right around the time they did the Heroes Reborn thing, and whatever Onslaught, whatever they call that crap, when Lee and Liefeld and those guys took over all the characters, and so they wanted to launch Thunderbolts as the team book that Marvel would have for the foreseeable future. And Kurt Busiek, thank God, he had talked to him over the years, and we worked together on a couple little things, and he really pushed for me. He was like, Harris was like, oh, we can get this guy, he's hot and cool and new, we'll get this guy, he's hot and cool and new. Now, granted, I'd been in business for like 5 years, so apparently I was no longer new. And Kurt really pushed for me. He says, I want somebody to do really good storytelling, because Kurt's all about the story. Do it well and do it on time. Get it done. Because this is really at the beginning of the, oh, I can't really finish this issue in time stuff that's going on now, which I have no respect for. And so they gave me the book. And the book of the, they started five titles at the same time, Hercules and that book and a couple others. And ours is the only one that's still around. And when I left the book, the sales went way down. So screw you, Bob Harris. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. So it was just a breath of life into my career. I mean, because people really seemed to like it, and it was good stories. Kurt's a hell of a writer, and we had a good team. So.
And then in the year 2000, I've read that you were a bit of a hard sell on the Ultimate Spider-Man initially.
Yes. Ultimate Spider-Man, which turns into this wonderful project. I was still really pissed off at Marvel. I was doing Thunderbolts and tired, but it was still the sort of resistance of me doing something else. I was ready to try and do something else. And Bob Harris was still editor-in-chief, and what's his name? Who was publisher at the time? What's his name?
Jemis.
Bill Jemis had come on, and he'd shaken things up pretty good. And apparently I had drawn a series of trading cards for him years before. He was just a huge fan of mine. I didn't know this. And so he was pushing for me to take over this book and to do Ultimate Spider-Man. Now, in the context of all this, John Byrne had just done something called Year One, which is kind of a revamp of Spider-Man, which had gone down like in flames. It was like a turd in church. It was bad. And so I was like, I read the idea for this. I'd never heard of Brian Bendis. This will, who's this guy? And I was like, I don't want to do this. This is just going to be bad. And it was pitched to me as a 6-issue miniseries, which is important to remember. So Harris called me, and somebody else called me, and I said, no, I'd really rather not. And finally, it was put to me basically, look, you're always looking for extra work because I can do more than one book a month. I said, if you don't do this, you're not going to get this extra work. You've got to do this. Jemis really wants you. I'm like, oh, great. Okay, fine. So I got the first script. It was like this thick because I was up until that point mostly working off of plots, which are short compared to, you know, because it's a breakdown of what's going on, and I do the storytelling. This is a full script. Some bitch, because it was a double-sized issue, and the script had to be 60 pages long. And I'm reading it. I'm like, what the hell? There's no Spider-Man in this book. What the hell is this? You know, you get to the last page, and you stick it to the ceiling. You haven't seen a costume. And I was like, what the hell's up with this? I'm kind of old school, you know, and fine, I'll do it. And I'm sorry, the first issue, it reflects that. I always try to give your all, but if you're not enthused, it shows. And to me, it shows. And I was still bound and determined after 6 issues. I was done. It was after the limited series. And about 3 issues into me drawing it, they decided they wanted to make it ongoing, and they offered it to me ongoing. And I said, no, I don't want to do this ongoing. No, it's actually just before the first issue came out, they offered it to me. This has been a while, so I'm kind of dredging it up in the old. So I was going to leave. They said, we're going to make it ongoing. We'd like you to keep doing it. And I said, no, I'd rather not. So this is a true story. Leonard Kirk is another artist. He's actually here. They offered it to him. I said, do you want to do Ultimate Spider-Man after Bagley leaves after 6? And he's like, hell yeah. And in the interim, like literally overnight, Bill Gemmis apparently found out I was leaving the book, and he's literally, so kids in the room, who the fuck fired Bagley? I don't know about this. And they're like, nobody, he just didn't want to do the book. Well, this all happened within like a week. And the book came out, and it was beautiful. The coloring was great, the paper was really great, and it sold gangbusters. People loved it. And I was like, and Cliff Biggers, my friend from earlier, is like, dude, you got to stay on this book. So I called him up. It had been a couple of days, I think, and or a week since, you know, they'd offered it to Kirk. And I didn't know about offering it to Kirk. I called, I said, can I stand on the book? And the editor was like, thank God, yes, because Jim's is mad or hell. Like, okay, cool. So they called Leonard Kirk up, and he said, hey, Leonard, about Ultimate Spider-Man. He's like, oh, boy, don't we start early? And he's like, you're not doing it. And he's like, oh, everybody has had, I've had this story, everybody's had the exact same story, trust me. So, years later, like 3 or 4 years later, I'm still doing Ultimate Spider-Man. Is there anything? No, I guess not. Anybody got a tissue? There's women in here, they should have tissues. So, I go out to thank you. Appreciate it. You haven't used it, have you? Good. So I go out to Seattle for a con, and I go down in the lobby to meet up to go to the con at the hotel, and I'm sitting there, and there was something going on in my life. I was pissed off about something. And back then, my daughter was dating, and I was working out really hard. I could bench press about 250, and I'm small, but I'm strong. So in comes this guy, and he's this kind of, he's actually littler than I am, got a little soft and round, and he comes in the room, and somebody goes, hey, Leonard, this is Mark Bagley. He goes, oh, you're Mark Bagley. I'm going to kick your ass. And I stood up, and I'm almost always like below. I was like, bring it, shithead, you know? It was hilarious. I thought he was serious, and I was seriously going to just knock him across the room. And he goes, no, I'm just kidding. And he told me the story about getting the job taken away from him. And so we laughed, and it was fun. But that book turned into quite the project, because I did it for 111 issues and, you know, broke Stan and Jack's record on FF, and people still love it and miss me. And I've had more girls come up and go, I just started reading comic books with this book, and I love you. And I'm like, oh, that's great, you know. So you're 16, leave me alone. You know, it's been a really good gig.
Well, one of the key issues was...
You got lots of questions. I'm just running my mouth, aren't
I? It's okay.
This is what I do.
It was issue number 13, where in the basement with Peter Parker chatting with Mary Jane.
No, she's upstairs. They're upstairs his bedroom.
That's right. Thank you.
And he's like, you're not doing anything up there, are you? Be safe. You know?
And so he drops the bomb on her, basically telling him that he's Spider-Man. How did you approach that issue? Like, you know... It had, you were saying in that first issue, there was very little Spider-Man, there was very little action, just, you know, two characters in a bedroom.
Well, by issue 13, I'd gotten what Brian was doing and was loving it and was having a great time with it. And Brian and I were like this, we're still like this. He's got such a man crush, it's hilarious. I have hair and I'm taller. And so he sent me the script, and it was basically these two kids sitting in his bedroom talking. And Peter, you know, Peter loves Mary Jane, and she's his best friend, and, you know, he's been lying to her and breaking her heart and not showing up because he's Spider-Man. And get used to it. He's a guy. That's what they do, isn't it? Isn't it? And so it was a really great storytelling challenge because how do you make that interesting, you know? And Brian, you know, everybody seems to think I did. Because that's my thing about storytelling is almost anything can be made visually interesting if you work the camera angles and if you're close and in and out, you know how to do that. You know, if I were to go back, I'd do some redrawing on it because my faces have gotten a lot better. But, you know, it was a good challenge. And that book did really well. People love that book. And I've had more girls go, that book is my favorite book, you know. Because it was so real. That's why, like, we'd go, you know, Brian has probably cost me over the years, and I'm not kidding, $70,000 in art sales. Because we'd go 4 issues without him being in costume. And when you're doing art sales, you know, you've got this big splash page of Spider-Man, you know, that can be $1,000. You know, but if you got 7 panels of talking heads between Mary Jane or Pete or J. Jonah Jameson, you know, that's, you know, $20 and a can of Coke. You know, or a bag of Coke. And so, you know, it's like, but I, at that point, is to me, the most fun about it was those sorts of character things. The, you know, the back and forth and, you know, the visual keys of, you know, telling a story and having it be fun.
So why did you leave then?
Because I did 111 issues and I was tired and it was just time to go. You know,
must have been hard.
I love working with Brian, and I still love the book. I mean, it's the one of the only comics I still actually buy because Marvel doesn't give out samples anymore, the bastards. But it was just, I felt like for my career it was time to go. You know, I didn't want to get stale. I didn't want to get so, you know, known for it that I couldn't do anything else. And, you know, I mean, you look at my banner by my table, it's a huge Spider-Man, so I am known for it, which is fine, but it was just time. And I've been talking to Kurt Busiek again at DC, you know, he was at DC, and my contract was coming up at Marvel. And I felt like I needed to make a change because, to be honest, there were some things going on which I wasn't happy about, you know, business-wise. And they're recording this, and he's writing it down, so I'm not going to tell you what. But, you know, you're really screwing me up over here, you know? So I decided to jump ship, and I was very upfront with Marvel. I actually talked to Brian about it, how the best way to do it, because there's guys who left, and, you know, they burned the bridges behind them, and they're not welcome back. And Brian said, just tell them what you want to do. Just tell them you really want to, you know, let them make an offer to you, and let them make an, you know, negotiate that sort of thing, and, you know, just be upfront about it. And so I was. And, you know, I had lunch with Quesada, and he's like, you know, he said, you know, you are one of the few guys. I said, if it doesn't work out over there, you want to come back, you're welcome anytime. And that was it meant a lot. So, because, like I said, I'm not the new hot thing, but they appreciate a guy who does his work. Speaking of lunches, another good object lesson. Okay, I'm going to go off on a tangent. Not to drop names, but when I signed my last contract at Marvel, not this one, but the one before, actually had lunch. I went to New York and had lunch with, you know, Joe Quesada and Bill and Dan Buckley and a couple other guys. And Dan Buckley's a publisher. And he's a relatively young, he's younger, he's about 15 years younger than I am, probably, you know, everybody's 15 years younger than I am nowadays. But so we're sitting, we're talking and having a good time and having a good lunch, and Buckley says, you don't remember me, do you? And you hate that, man. When you're in the public eye, and I'm not any near the public eye like an actor, but I'm sort of a celebrity. I'm sort of known among us peeps. I said peeps. I never said peeps. And I said, no. He says, well, you did a con like 15 years ago somewhere. I don't even remember where. Ohio or some damn place. Who the hell wants to do a con in Ohio? Anyway, I said, yeah. I says, and I was working that con, and I was your line stopper. I was like, what? He says, yeah, they had a line like they do here, and I was your line stopper. And I said, was I nice to you? And he goes, oh, you were great. I said, thank God. But you know, those you step on the way up are going to step on you on the way down. And he's just like, thank God. So.
And so at DC, you did Trinity with Kurt Busiek.
Yep.
And then you did Justice League of America with James Robinson.
Yes.
And why did you choose to come back to Marvel?
because I did Trinity with Kurt Busiek and I did Justice League with James Robinson. That's a joke, okay? No. I love Marvel. I love Marvel's characters. I actually like them. You know, that was my favorite company growing up as a kid. And I didn't get to do sort of the projects I really wanted to do at DC. DC's a different animal. There's a different, you know, vibe over there for me. There really was. And there's stories that I can't tell now because I'm being recorded and this guy's writing shit down. And there are things that went on that drove me up the frickin' wall. A couple of days I just wanted to strangle somebody. And I'm like the happiest guy in the world. I love my job. I get up every day. I still work 60 hours a week, 70 hours a week. And I love it. But I just wanted to kill somebody. And one particular person. Who will go nameless. And so when the 3 years was up, it was time to go. You know, Trinity, I love Kurt, but it turned into something that I didn't sign on for. It turned into everybody but Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. It's just the way it happened. And there's no blame or anything, just the way it happened. But it was after that year of that, you know, doing, you know, 11 pages a week for a year, I was so exhausted. I was just beat up. And I did a four-issue Batman thing, which was fun. I mean, it was a good story, and I had a good time drawing it, and... And then they got JLA, which was one of the few books I would really want to do full-time at DC. I mean, Superman, maybe The Flash, but The Flash was taken. And JLA was so freaking frustrating because it was like everybody but the Justice League. And I talked to DiDio about it. I'm like, you know, why can't we have Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman? Well, they're just, you know, they're too powerful. It wouldn't make a good book. I'm like, oh, hello, look what's going on now. You know, and I was just, and then, you know... We had this list of characters. I was like, okay, fine, I'll accept, you know, Mon-El instead of Superman, and I'll accept this other character. And next thing we knew, it's like, it's not Mon-El, it's Supergirl. It was fun to draw, and I had a good time with her, and, you know, James did some good work, and, you know, it just didn't work for me. And when the time came, and then Brian calls, and he had the idea for all... He pitched something to me, else, I forget what, they pitched something at me. I was going to take over an X book, I think, actually. Yeah, I think when I left DC, I was going to do an X project. And then they call like 3 weeks later. These things always happen. It's like, that's, you're not going to be doing it. Why don't you do something else? What do you think of... Brian calls, we want to kill Peter. What do you mean you want to kill Peter? We want to really kill Peter. And I'm like, oh, really? He says, and that'd be great to have you come back and do the 6-issue arc, and it'll be this, and it'll be just exactly what you do, because it'll be very emotional and lots of tears and... You know, and I'm like, that sounds like a hell of a lot of fun, you know? And he explained to me what he had plans for afterwards, Miles and all that stuff, and, you know, and I said, that just sounds perfect. And came on, and it was one of the best, you know, storytelling experiences I've ever had. It was so much fun. And the Fallout issue afterwards, there's a great story there. I don't know how many of you guys have read it, but there's a scene where Aunt May is going into St. Patrick's Cathedral. And she's with Gwen Stacy, and they walk in, and there's this little girl, and she goes, hey, and, you know, and gets Aunt May's attention somehow, I forget how exactly, and this little girl, she's got a hat, she's got a little scar on her face, and she says, are you Spider-Man's mommy? And she walks over, and I'm going to get for telling this story, because it kills me. And so I got to draw the little girl, and it's my granddaughter, it's PJ, and my daughter's holding her, and there's my grandson's there, yeah, I'm that old guy, so I'm my grandfather. And it was just, it's, you know, man, I read that scene, and this scene is so great, you know, Spider-Man saved me from a fire so I didn't die. Whoa. Yeah, so, it's so cool. And, I mean, Brian's such a good writer. I mean, he's just that good, so.
One of the things that I really liked about it is that comics rarely end nowadays, and was there some satisfaction in being able to close the book on Peter Parker, the Ultimate Spider-Man?
Close the book, that's great, that was really good.
Well, because, you know, you came back, you wrapped it up.
He's the best he can do. Yeah, you know, it's cool. I got the hardcovers on my bookshelf, and it's like this, you know, stack of books this wide on my bookshelf, all the hardcovers. And it's such a nice piece of work. You know, rather than doing, you know, miniseries after miniseries, to have this sort of a volume, you know, of pretty good work. I mean, there's a dog or two in there. You know, some pages I'm not happy with, and a couple of arcs I wasn't really crazy about, but, you know, it's a body of work. You don't get to do that very much anymore in this business, you know, to make your name with it. And that's what I'm about. That's what I've always been about. I'm not, you know, hot commodity enough to sell just a miniseries on my artwork. I've got to be on something that some people can invest their emotions into and invest their interest into. And if it comes out monthly, that's the big problem with coming out, you know, every 3 months or every 4 months or something that doesn't ship. You know, you're at the end of the issue, and whether it's a cliffhanger or just, you know, you're leading into the next issue, you really freaking enjoyed this issue, and it comes out in a month, you still sort of remember in the back of your head how much fun that book was, whether it was a cliffhanger or anything else. It's in the back of your mind. It leads you to buy that book again. But if it's been 6 months, I don't care if it's freaking Art Adams drawing it, you go, was that good? Or this is thing over here looks like it'd be more fun to read, you know? And you lose that emotional connection and that intellectual connection with the story. I mean, you can remember, you know, mostly what the hell happened in a book you read 4 months ago, because it takes you 10 minutes to read the freaking book, you know? And to me, that's important. And it's way more important than it's giving credit. And I know I sound like a really old guy right now, but it is. And I think a lot of you guys appreciate it. I'm not looking for kudos or anything, but I think that's why my career is what it is I've got a following of people who, you know, they know what I'm going to give them, and they know that I'm always trying to get better, and they know that, you know, if they commit to a book, it's going to be a book that comes out, and they're not going to lose track of it in 3 months. It's not going to have three fill-in artists in a row because, you know, I'm too lazy to get my ass at my desk. You know, so I have 130 stitches in my thigh. I think I told you 112, but it's like 130 stitches in my thigh from a skill saw because I suck at construction. So, you know, it twitches every now and then.
So between the 1990s and the 2000s, there was sort of a shift in storytelling, as you were talking about before. Sort of, you know, BUCX style was a bit more of the old school, and then Bendis, again, a lot of decompression, a lot more character.
He hates that expression. Bendis, don't use deconstructed or decompression. He hates that, so I'm just telling you.
So how did you adapt to that? Did you like the change?
Sorry about that. We wondered who that was.
Sorry about that. Sorry, everybody.
I called Thailand. You got me a girl. No, I'm just and a small boy. I am funny. So, what was the question?
Sort of the contrasting the 90s to the 2000s, the different styles.
It took some getting used to. I've gotten to the point where I enjoy it more now. I mean, to me, one of the most boring things to draw anymore is a fight scene. It's like, okay, somebody's punching somebody again. It's hard to, you know, to draw that and have it be visually interesting when you've done it so many times. But there's, you know, these days of, you know, having to have a fight scene in every issue, it's just, I'm sort of glad they're gone, because, you know, maybe they're not written as much for kids as they should be anymore, but they're written pretty well, a lot of them, and it makes it more fulfilling for me. And there are books out there for kids, which is important. To get them to read what I'm drawing. But it did take a while. Like I said, it took 6 issues before I really got what Brian was doing and went, oh, this is working, you know? And so.
Well, and while you were at DC, were you offered any part of the new 52?
No, I was out of there. I was the dust in the wind by the time that rolled around. Thank God.
Can you tell us a bit about your creator-owned series, Brilliant?
It's creator owned. It's called Brilliant. This is the thing Brian pitched to me when I had pretty much verbally committed to Kurt that I was going to, you know, jump and go to DC. I mean, I'd made a commitment. And so when it came up, you know, and Marvel was trying to hide, you know, see if I couldn't go, I was like, yeah, you know. And Brian says, well, how about this? I got this idea for this creator-owned series involving these kids. And it's sort of like this. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. It's like, you son of a bitch, if you'd have pitched this to me 6 months ago, you know, I'd still be at Marvel. But I'd committed. So he held it for 3 years. And the story is basically, he got the idea for it, he tells me, sort of from the movie 21, which is basically about these young brainiacs get hooked up with this professor, and they go and they count cards, and they get in all sorts of trouble for counting cards because they have this gift for counting cards, for doing math. What if you got this group of college-age kids who suddenly figure out how to do superpowers and see what that does to them, and play it along that line? And that sounds like fun. No costumes, nothing like that. Just what would happen to, you know, kids who aren't they're very smart, but not very bright when it comes to real world applications of things. And things go off the rails. This book is a lot darker than I thought it was going to be when I signed on to it. I mean, you know, people die that you don't expect to die. And I didn't expect to die. I would have done so much work designing them. But it's a lot like, you know, the Ultimate Spider-Man thing where Peter dies because, you know what? You're a teenager, you got superpowers, you're going to freaking die if there's supervillains out there, that sort of thing. I mean, that's just the way it's going to work because you're not very bright. And you know, it's like giving a 15-year-old the keys to a car. You know, that ends up really well. And so this is that, only, you know, I mean, you've got the FBI running after him right now, and, you know, it's a fun book. And we had trouble getting off the ground because I wanted to do straight from pencils, and we couldn't come upon a look that we liked enough. So we had to find ourselves an anchor, and we got a good anchor, Joe Rubenstein. And it's a lot of work. I agreed to do 7 issues, you know, that, and they've just announced that it's going to be ongoing, which, you know, the schedule is every other month, but I don't know how ongoing it's going to be because it's a lot of work for me. I'm not as fast as I used to be. I'm doing the Avengers right now, and that's very time intensive. And my next project is going to be something that's also going to be very time intensive. And I like to exercise. I mean, I look like it, but I like to get out and walk in the air, you know? And I'm having trouble doing that right now. So we'll see. But it's a good ride.
So let's talk about the Avengers Assembled.
You do say a boot up here. I love that.
it's going to obviously tie into the new movie coming out this summer. And I think start all the cast of the movie as well as the Avengers.
Yes, it is. It's, I mean, Brian pitched this to me, and it's like, after the death of, and Brian says, you know, he's like, I didn't know what I was going to be doing, and, you know, it's just sort of, the writers have a lot more control of what goes on in the business, the writers and the editors and the artists, they're sort of the cog, so I was a little nervous about it, and I was actually going to do, they just did a miniseries with the X-Men of the current X-Men going back in time, meeting the old X-Men or something. I'm not exactly sure how it worked. I didn't read it. But I was going to draw that. And once again, a couple weeks later, they call us. Brian says, look, you're not doing the X-Men. So what do you mean? I can't tell you what you're going to be doing, but you're going to love it. What? Tom's going to call you. Tom's going to talk. He talks like this. Tom's going to call you. Okay. So he calls me one time and says, you know, Brian's doing lots of movies and things right now. He's involved with the production of, you know, TV series Powers and stuff. This is a couple years ago. He calls me. Mark! Guess what? I got to sleep for 4 hours yesterday. What's that, Brian? I had lunch with Charlize Theron. He's like, it's Theron, you moron. But, it's like, it was funny. But, so they offered me the Avengers, and the idea was to sort of tie it into the movie with the same superhero cast, but there'll be the Marvel characters. I won't be doing likenesses because my likenesses suck. And it's going to be Brian writing it. It's Brian's last hurrah in the Avengers because, I actually found out about this after I got on the Avengers. I thought we were going to be ongoing for a while. He's like, and I don't, still, to this day, I'm working on a third issue. I have no idea how many issues I'm doing. I do not know. I know what I'm doing next. It's going to be after Avengers versus X-Men. I know what I'm doing next, but I have no idea how many issues of this I'm doing. And I'm having a blast. But Brian calls us, you know, I'm leaving the book. I'm like, what? He's like, dude, I've done 235 issues of the Avengers. I'm done. And I'm like, okay. He sounded like that. I've never heard him sound like that before. Like he had a pair. No, I'm kidding. But it's a joke. I love Brian. So I'm doing the Avengers now, and I'm having a blast. I'm getting to draw, you know, the Hulk, and I'm getting to draw these guys who I've drawn all of them at one time or another to some extent or another. Hawkeye I've drawn the most because I did him in Thunderbolts, but now he's in his new outfit, which looks a little, you know, doesn't have a big, which I never really liked his really costume that much, but I'm getting to draw them all enough now where I get comfortable drawing them. I mean, I've never liked my Hulk. I've drawn a Hulk that, you know, it's the Hulk, but I never settled on a look that I like, and I've settled on a look that I really like. He just looks like the freaking Hulk to me, and that's fun. And I'm getting the same way with Cap and Thor, so, you know, it's a good book. It's a lot of fun.
So, I guess just right on that, is there a character you like drawing? I guess, you know, you've
I like drawing them all. Yeah. They're all fun to draw, to some extent or another, except Iron Man. The costume is hard to draw. It's the new costume he's got. It's beautifully designed. I don't know if Stuart Immonen designed it or what, but it's just got, it's got weird lines. I mean, I have to have a picture of it sitting in front of me to be able to remember how the lines go on this costume. It just, It's I have trouble drawing it, that damn helmet, but I miss the old days and just the oval in the eyes and you're good and you're done. That's the helmet. But, yeah, that's the only thing I have trouble drawing, I think, right now.
Well, that's actually all the questions I had, believe it or not. And I can open it up to some questions.
I'm good. Yes?
Would you be interested at all at any time coming back to, like, Ultimate Spider-Man with Miles Morales?
Probably not, because, you know, I've sort of done that now, you know. I love the new book. I'm still reading it, you know. Sarah Pacelli's stuff is just amazing, you know, and they've had some other good fill-in artists on there. I can't remember everybody's name anymore. But, you know, probably not. There's other fish to fry at Marvel right now for me. So, and a lot of it depends on who I'd be working with. I mean, that's become as important as anything else, almost. Is, you know, it's a team type thing. If you don't get along, then you got trouble. You know, some of the trouble I had at DC at one point or another. My next project, I'm actually not working with Brian. I'm working with somebody else who's pretty up there and as a writer and pretty well known. And, you know, you guys will be excited about it. And I don't know how the hell we're going to work together. We'll see. It'll be fun. You know, a good inside baseball story is back in the day when I was doing Amazing Spider-Man, the writer on the book was David Michelinie. Michelle, whatever his name was, and he was leaving the book. And Danny Fingeroth is, like I said, he's one of my best friends in the business, and was the editor. And one of his other best friends in the business was Mark DeMatteis, who's a writer. And Mark had been doing Spectacular Spider-Man, I think, or Web Up, one or the other, forever. And Mark is a different kind of writer. He's got a lot of psychological stuff he does. He's got a lot of, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So Danny calls me, and his genius idea is he's going to put his two best buddies together on Amazing Spider-Man, you know? And he called and told me, and I was like, I don't know if I really want to work with DeMatteis. I don't know if he really writes the kind of stories I want to do. And Danny's like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm sort of, you know, and DeMatteis is like, well, you know, he's got nothing to, you know, he's got nothing to second guess himself. He's a legend in the business. So he brought us together for a meeting and actually flew me to New York, which I sound like I go to New York all the time. I think I've been once in the last 5 years, so, you know, it's not like I get up there all the time. But so we had this meeting, and it was tense. Because I was like, I don't know if I really... And DeMatteis is a big guy. I mean, he's tall. He's also a pacifist, kind of a, you know, he's sort of a, you know, lefty Libby. I'd probably shot him. But he was tense. Because he, like I said, he had nothing to, he, you know, he's got nothing to be ashamed of. He's got nothing to be embarrassed by. He does what he does, and it's very, very well. And so we just decided to go, okay, fine. We'll do it, and we'll see what happens. And we did some pretty good work. I mean, we ended up getting together and working very well together, you know. So sometimes you never know. So it's good.
So thanks. Go ahead. How long does it take to finish one book?
It takes me probably 2.5-3 weeks. It depends upon the book. Depends upon, you know, Avengers takes a bit longer because there's all this choreography you got to do, and I'm drawing these huge scenes with lots of characters and lots of stuff going on. But usually about 2.5 weeks. I just did 12 pages of Brilliant in a week, so I can do some stuff faster because there's a lot of talking heads and that sort of thing. But any faster than that, I'm not comfortable with it. Yes?
If DC hadn't done the new 52 and you wouldn't go back, what book would you have liked to work on and who would you have liked to work with?
Well, DC's got a bunch of great characters, and it is about who you're working with. You know, the Flash would be fun to draw. I think I'd do a pretty good Flash. Superman, I mean, almost any of them, you know, but I wasn't happy there. So, you know, that's sort of rearview mirror time, you know. And now it's just, it's nuts over there right now. So the stories I'm hearing on the grapevine between, you know, me and my peeps is, there's some stuff going down that isn't pretty.
So. There's another question.
Yes?
In your practice, how much, like, digital do you use? Are you still just straight pencil? Or?
I am the Cro-Magnon man. I am the Luddite of the year, man. I got this brand new banner sitting behind me at the desk. I had my daughter get that thing all set up for me because it's like, you gotta download this, you gotta do that, you gotta do this, you gotta screw it. Angie, do it because she types like a madman. Yeah, I just still do pencils. I still, you know, I scan everything in and send it off. The Avengers is actually being inked on Blue Line, which means the original pencils never get touched by the ink, so I've still got the original pencils, which I kind of hate. I kind of like having, in the old days, you split it up. I mean, the inker got a third of the pages, and the penciler got two-thirds of the pages to keep or to resell or whatever they wanted to do with it. And you have just one thing. Now there's the pencils, and then there's the ink version. Although I think Blue Lines are smaller, and they're not, you know, so I don't know if it, and I'm not all about the money, but some of it is about the money and the value of it, and I don't know if it hurts the value of it as an intrinsic thing, you know, because, you know, I don't see the sense in keeping everything I draw. Some guy, the most disappointing time I pointed in one convention I ever had was Neil Adams walked up to me. This is back, I think I was doing the Warriors, and I had pages for sale on my table, and Neil Adams walked up to my table, like, freaking Neil Adams, whoa. He's nuts, by the way. He kind of goes to the pages like this. You sell your pages? I said, yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm making like $20,000 a year. Thank you. I got a wife and a kid, you bastard. And and he just goes, hmm. And he kind of turns around and walked away. And I was like, well, I don't see the point of keeping everything you draw because, you know, it just gets stacked up in your attic or stacked up where you save it. Nobody gets to see it. And the people who love what you do and they want to have a piece of it and, you know, I don't see the problem with that. What artist hasn't sold his work over the years, you know? So screw him, right? Right? Yeah. Yes?
Who are some of the artists that you enjoy?
Now? Some of the current guys?
Now or in the past?
The past guys I mentioned, you know, Buscema and Neil Adams and, you know, I did like Neil Adams stuff. Gil Kane, John Romita, those guys. Nowadays, those guys, just I love their stuff. I mean, you know, Copier and Stuart Immonen is just, he's amazing. And who else is out there now I like? Oh, there's just a bunch of guys. You know, and I look at them and I go, damn, I wish I was that good. And I keep trying to get that good, you know, so.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Yes?
I just want to say really quickly, like, you're my favorite Spider-Man artist.
Thank you.
Inspired me to draw when I was little, so thank you for that. I just had a question about digital and how Marvel's, you know, day in digital things to start soon. And you're really fast, you've never really had an issue, I don't think you've ever had an issue with getting deadline books coming out. But the digital aspect of comics, is that going to affect your artwork in any way? Did they say anything to you about that?
No, they haven't. A lot of guys, I don't know about a lot, but quite a few guys are going to tablets and working, you know, directly from tablets, and I guess, you know, from what I've seen, you can do some amazing stuff with it. But there's no pushback on me, no pressure to, like, go that way, which is good because I like having the hardcover. I like having the pencil and, you know, I just do. I don't get this whole, you know, there's never an original piece of work. There's stuff you can print off, but then it's still just a print, you know? And I just, that doesn't appeal to my artistic sense or, you know, it just doesn't. I mean, the guys who do it, and they do it very well, you know, it's amazing. Quesada does it now that way, and hell, Alex Maleev, I don't think he's touched a pencil in 20 years, you know. So, anyway.
And just from that artistic point of view, is there any advice for aspiring pencilers, artists?
Practice. Treat it like a job. I mean, these guys that come up and, I'm not drawing today, I'm not doing this. It's a job, you know, it's a career, it's a profession, and I don't respect people who don't treat it like that because, you know, I've had real jobs, you know, and there are people out there who'd kill to do what I'm doing, and there's people out there without jobs, you know, and I'm lucky enough to get up every day, and I love what I do, and, you know, if I work 10 hours a day, which I usually work about 10 hours a day, and it's 10 hours during the weekdays, I usually work about 6 hours on Saturday and about 3 hours on Sunday morning because I love the political shows and I just draw while they're on. You know, and it's a lot of freaking hours. But, you know, my first 3 or 4 hours a day is fun. Then the next couple hours turns into a little, like, work. And if I'm going to spend another couple hours and do 10 hours, and those last couple hours, by the end of that, literally I can't draw anymore. I will sit there, I'll be working on a panel, and I can't freaking draw it. And I will work on this panel for an hour, and it won't come. I will go to bed, I'll get up the next morning, I'll have it done in 20 minutes. Literally, it happens. My wife would just leave the desk. You know, and I have a hard time doing that, but it's like I run out of gas. There's nothing left in the tank. And, you know, so luckily it's there the next morning. So I recharge like a Volt, because that works so well.
Great.
Anyway, just work, you know, practice. And that's it.
Great, thanks. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.